Thanks for listening to Westminster Insider. We'll get started right after this.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
It was a quiet Saturday afternoon in March 2018, and the Labour MP for Darlington, Jenny Chapman, was angry and upset. A few days earlier, she'd watched her party leader, Jeremy Corbyn, respond to the Russian Novichok poisoning in Salisbury, an actual chemical weapon attack on British soil. He refused to hold Russia responsible for the attack and suggested Britain send samples of the Novichok to Russia for testing. As Jenny Chapman sat at home, replaying it in her head, she felt more and more furious. She picked up the phone to a fellow MP and close colleague. "Look, I don't know if you've thought about standing for Labour leader," she said to him, "but I think you should. And if you want to, I'll help you. But we need to get organised." Keir Starmer, the colleague at the other end of the phone, said yes.
For the next nearly 2 years, they would hold secret meetings every Monday morning in Jenny Chapman's house with a select number of trusted colleagues to make sure he was ready for a leadership campaign if or when the time arose. By December 2019, after the worst election defeat in Labour's recent history, Starmer's moment would arrive.
There is a process now of reflection on this result.
I don't underestimate the size of the task ahead.
Jeremy Corbyn resigned and Keir Starmer threw his hat into the ring to replace him. Starmer's leadership campaign centred on 10 pledges to Labour Party members. He pledged to renationalise rail, mail, energy and water, to scrap university tuition fees. Essentially, he pledged to retain the radical spirit of the Corbynite agenda. And he paid tribute, you'll remember, to my friend, Jeremy Corbyn,
who energised our movement and who's a friend as well as a colleague.
Today, Keir Starmer is the leader of the Labour Party. He has abandoned every one of those 10 pledges, and his friend, Jeremy Corbyn, has been banned from sitting as a Labour MP. So, what does Keir Starmer really believe? And who will he be if he makes it into number 10? This week on Westminster Insider, we're bringing you the second half of our profile of the man who wants to be our next Prime Minister. In part one, we journeyed from Starmer's childhood home in Oxted.
He has an active interest in women and they have an active interest in him.
Through a brush with the police on the French Riviera in his student days.
Did Keir get arrested?
I can't say that.
To his career as a barrister and then the country's top prosecutor.
I remember thinking as he was arguing, "Keir, for God's sake, spice it up a bit."
And we left him just as he was hobnobbing in North London with lots of people who just happened to be from the world of politics. This week, we take you back to the beginning of his political journey. From his first days as a wannabe Labour MP, through his rapid rise and turbulent time in Jeremy Corbyn's shadow cabinet, to his secret plotting to stand as Labour leader. Then we go inside Starmer's leadership today.
There were a few of them that I just thought weren't signed up to the whole Corbyn project, and Keir was one of those people.
What you're seeing now is his real politics. There was an understanding of the best issues to talk about if you want to become leader of the Labour Party.
We're in contact frequently. Sometimes it's just me sending him a joke.
Yeah, he's pretty upset, yeah. It was a good few hours of soul-searching.
So, from Politico, I'm Alva Ray.
And I'm Maggie Chambray.
And this week on Westminster Insider, we're going inside his political career. And we're asking, who is the real Keir Starmer? Keir Starmer's political career began unglamorously, over lots and lots of coffees, trying to charm the members of the Holborn and St Pancras constituency Labour Party, one by one. Frank Dobson, who'd been the MP for that North London constituency for 35 years, had announced he would be retiring at the next election.
No, I shan't give way, I don't have time.
A selection battle for this very safe Labour seat was underway.
A mutual acquaintance texted me and said, you should meet this bloke called Keir. He's quite good. He wants to become the MP.
Ben Nunn was an active member and former chair of the local party in Holborn and St Pancras.
We met in this caff in Great Portland Street, and you'd expect me to say this, but he was so good. I mean, I was genuinely quite taken aback because I'd met some of the other candidates who were good people, good candidates, but he was so good. And I was really quite struck by how impressive he was. His pitch was very much, I've seen how the criminal justice system has been broken because of years of cuts, and I want to do something about it. And I've got to the point in my life when I think I can't do anything to change politics unless I'm in politics. And it was obvious, he wasn't explicit about it, but it was very obvious he didn't want to just be the MP for Holborn and St Pancras, although that was important to him because it's his home constituency. He wanted to be more, and you could tell that very quickly. And I think one of the first things I said to him was, I assume you'll be in Ed Miliband's cabinet. Now, that didn't happen for a different reason.
So, as our loyal Westminster listeners will already be aware, Ben Nunn is not just an active member of Holborn and St Pancras' local Labour Party. He was, in fact, so impressed with Starmer that he volunteered to help on his selection campaign and would then go on to work for him as Director of Comms.
Starmer's selection campaign was well-funded. He was being introduced to other MPs at fancy North London dinner parties, and, not unhelpfully, he had the tacit support of the then Labour leader, Ed Miliband.
Ed had asked him to help with some pieces of work in the run-up to the 2015 election as well, but, you know, the accusations of parachuting were rubbish. I mean, he wanted to be selected through his own merits.
Starmer was selected as the Labour candidate for Holborn and St Pancras in December 2014. And elected in May 2015.
It is such a privilege to be the MP for Holborn and St Pancras and to follow in the footsteps of the legend Frank Dobson MP.
So, Sir Keir Starmer, the country's former top prosecutor, had entered the world of politics.
And now it's time for someone else to
But it wasn't quite how he would have hoped.
So I'm tendering my resignation, taking effect.
He didn't walk straight into Prime Minister Ed Miliband's new cabinet in May 2015. Instead, he walked straight to the opposition benches and a Labour parliamentary party tearing itself apart.
Jeremy Corbyn, 251,000.
In the end, there was no room for doubt. Nearly 60% of the vote, nothing other than a landslide, a thumping win by the man who only just scraped onto the ballot.
Well, the mood was pretty down because we've just lost and we had a leadership election which, to a lot of us, went wrong.
Jenny Chapman, then the MP for Darlington, would go on to become one of Starmer's closest allies. But in the early years, Starmer didn't really find his tribe.
Great claims are made of Magna Carta.
Yeah, I didn't really notice him, to be honest with you, through that period. I know his mum died during the election campaign. And I think the first couple of years, or the first year at least, tried to establish himself in his constituency.
And that it was the origin of trial by jury.
Starmer had backed the early favourite, Andy Burnham, in the 2015 Labour leadership contest. When Jeremy Corbyn won, Starmer took on the role of Shadow Immigration Minister.
It wasn't some great strategy of putting Keir Starmer in that post. It was almost like, quick, fill the places, show we can actually fill a front bench.
This is Andrew Fisher, who was Executive Director of Policy under Jeremy Corbyn.
It was almost just putting pegs in holes and seeing who would accept.
After the Brexit referendum, the discontent Labour MPs were feeling about Jeremy Corbyn boiled over and they resigned in huge numbers, triggering a leadership contest. Starmer was among those who resigned and backed Owen Smith's leadership challenge.
There was a summer from hell. Jeremy wins again. There's a decision to make for those of us that stood down, whether we go back. I'm speaking to Keir at a dinner at a party conference in Liverpool that year and just talking about whether or not you take a role. I felt you should, because I thought that it was important to play your part. And also at some point, things would always move on. And I was starting to think at that point that Keir was one of the people who might be somebody that might want to take on a leadership role in the future.
So Keir Starmer was in the political limelight for the very first time as a key member of Jeremy Corbyn's shadow cabinet. Jenny Chapman joined Starmer's Brexit team as a shadow minister, where she became a key political ally. These were the years of Brexit chaos, growing discontent over anti-Semitism, plotting, and Labour MPs leaving the party.
So what was the working relationship like with Jeremy Corbyn and his team in those years?
Up and down. There were moments of real tension where I think, with the best will in the world, Jeremy didn't have a great grasp on some of the issues. It's no secret there were games going on inside his office, but increasingly so as time wore on, which made things difficult.
It was functional, I would say. I mean, they had a bond because they were both Arsenal supporters.
Andrew Fisher again, Corbyn's executive director of policy.
They weren't friends in the sense of, you know, they wouldn't go and socialise together, or they wouldn't just have a natter unless there was a meeting and there was a bit of time to kill before it. So, you know, it was friendly-ish, but it was productive more than, you know, it was functional, I would say, more than having a huge amount of warmth. But there was no hostility there either. I mean, I think that, of course, there were at times where there was frustration over our strategy on Brexit.
Wes Streeting, the Labour MP for Ilford North, is now, of course, Starmer's shadow health secretary. But back in those days, he was a frustrated backbencher who would come to Starmer to vent.
I think there were a few of them that I just thought weren't drinking the Kool-Aid and weren't signed up to the whole Corbyn project and certainly would give me a fairer hearing. And Keir was one of those people. Obviously, Tom Watson was one of those people. I knew with Keir that his starting point would be, you know, broadly the right place.
In March 2018, Yulia and Sergei Skripal were poisoned by the nerve agent Novichok in the quiet city of Salisbury. It was a Russian assassination attempt on British soil. And as we've already heard, Jeremy Corbyn's response dismayed some of his MPs.
Something had happened that had made me very, very cross about Jeremy. I was fucking crazy.
This is Jenny Chapman. We started our chat in a tea room in the House of Lords and it got quite noisy. But bear with us, because this is where the Starmer leadership plotting began, and she's speaking very candidly.
I think it might have been Salisbury where he stood up in Parliament and said, "I want you to send the samples of Novichok to Russia for analysis." I just thought this was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever heard. And I was angry and upset about it. And I just thought, this cannot go on. You know, we are not a credible party.
In a rage, Jenny Chapman picked up the phone to Keir Starmer.
I was at home on Saturday afternoon and just called him and said, "Look, I don't know if you've ever thought about being leader, but I think you should. And if you do want to, then it would be a very good idea to start talking about it and start thinking what that would look like, who you would want involved, how you want to present yourself, what it is you would want to do as leader of the Labour Party, what kind of leader you'd want to be, what you would want to achieve, what your ambition would be for the country, the obvious things." And he said yes, that that was something that he would like to do, and we would meet regularly, you know, from there on. We would have those discussions for an hour first thing on a Monday morning. It wasn't something at all that preoccupied him or that was the sort of focus of his attention beyond that brief period of time that we carved out on a Monday morning.
So that was it. The unofficial secret leadership campaign had begun. And behind the scenes, Jenny Chapman quietly helped Starmer get to know more of his colleagues. even though it didn't exactly come naturally to him.
I felt that it was important that you had the support of the PLP, so I used to emphasise the need to get to know a few more people in the parliamentary party and to reach out to different sort of little groups that there are, and, you know, some success at that. You know, he was never one for hanging out in the tea room in the bar. Like, he would always be, he'd treat, you know, this is a job here, so he comes to work, He doesn't come to work to socialise.
While Starmer kept one eye on a potential leadership contest down the line, Parliament was deadlocked over Brexit, and pressure was building from the Labour grassroots for the party to support a second Brexit referendum. By the summer of 2018, Ben Nunn, now Keir Starmer's right-hand man in Westminster, remembers the pressure on them.
There was a period over the summer when it was obvious the second referendum, Labour Party was going to have to get into a position where it at least acknowledged a second referendum as an option. And the run-up to party conference was about making that work.
Having swept them away, we want to install a radical Labour government capable of transforming this country.
But Starmer also leaned into it. He encouraged the Labour membership, who one day, of course, would be picking a new leader, to see him as their second referendum guy. At Labour's 2018 conference in Liverpool, Starmer enraged Corbyn's team by delivering a speech committing to including Remain on the ballot without approval from Corbyn.
And nobody is ruling out Remain as an option.
The leadership was furious, but the grassroots loved it.
He got a big, big cheer. And for sort of the Labour grassroots, it felt like he was
their champion.
Were they right to see him in that way?
I don't think they were in the way that some of them did, because I think his position, for a start, he'd come to it having exhausted all the other possibilities. He obviously did vote Remain. I don't think he wasn't an uncompromising, you know, it's Remain or nothing. He never thought that we should go into an election saying, you know, we're all doomed and life will never be as good again because we've left the European Union. That's just not what he thinks.
I think he was quite a firm Remainer in the referendum campaign and ardently believed that Britain would be better off if we remained.
Corbyn ally Andrew Fisher again.
But since that, I think he's quite pragmatic, and I think that's true of his entire politics. I think it's whatever is not necessarily the path of least resistance, but whatever is a kind of viable route at that time he will take. And that's why you see him skipping about on policy more broadly. You know, his 10 pledges were useful in order to get the Labour leadership. But now they're not useful. He's dumped all of those and is going for something else.
The UK Labour Party has been hit by accusations of anti-Semitism in recent months.
While Brexit rumbled on, Labour MPs were growing more and more frustrated about how the Labour leadership was handling complaints of anti-Semitism.
I cannot remain in a party that I have today come to the sickening conclusion is institutionally anti-Semitic.
While Luciana Berger and other Labour MPs resigned from the party altogether, Starmer stayed in the shadow cabinet.
It was discussed at shadow cabinet a couple of times, and Keir Starmer, I think, spoke once, I can recall, on it.
Do you remember what he said?
He was critical. He said, you know, we've got to get a grip on this. It's damaging us. And, you know, which was nothing different to what John McDonnell or, you know, John Healey or Barry Gardner or anyone, without breaking any confidences of this, you know, everyone was on the same page on that, as this needed to be tackled.
Did he consider resigning from shadow cabinet over that? Do you remember?
We did have a couple of conversations about that, and he always said that while he felt he was adding value, he would stay. But if it got to the point where he felt that he wasn't making any difference, that would be when he would walk away. It never got to that point.
Team Starmer felt he was in a good position by the last months of 2019. And around this time, cheesy videos about his past record as a human rights lawyer just inexplicably started to appear.
You don't get free lawyers for libel cases, but luckily Keir came along early on and volunteered to help us out with legal advice.
If Jeremy Corbyn would have to suddenly resign after the general election, they were ready.
Stay with us.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts?
Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It is 6 minutes past five in the morning, and we are now in a position to say that this election of 2019 has been won by the Conservatives.
On Thursday, the 12th of December, 2019, the Labour Party suffered one of its worst ever election defeats.
The biggest Conservative majority since Margaret Thatcher's third victory back in 1987.
Across Northern England and the Midlands, hundreds of thousands of voters were backing the Conservatives for the first time in their history as the red wall of traditional Labour seats began to crumble.
In 1989, Russia's Berlin Wall came down. In 2019, Labour's Red Wall came down.
Boris Johnson may just have redrawn the map.
In the early hours of the Friday morning, with votes still coming in, Jeremy Corbyn resigned as leader of the Labour Party.
We will forever continue the cause for socialism, for social justice, and for a society based on the needs of all rather than the greed of a few.
2 days after that catastrophic defeat, Team Starmer assembled at a kitchen table in North London.
Part of the reason I'm delighted that we're at your kitchen table is I've heard, Scarlett, that this is the table where Keir Starmer's leadership campaign was plotted.
No, I think there was a meeting here, I think on the Sunday.
That's Scarlett Maguire, who's been a media trainer for almost every Labour leader since Neil Kinnock.
And it was here, and it was the only time. I mean, after that, they took him away to more important places and they got an office.
Team Starmer included Ben Nunn and Jenny Chapman, who would become chair of the campaign. Starmer ran for Labour leader with a series of pledges, among them to ditch tuition fees and renationalise rail, mail, energy and water. He hasn't kept any of those since he became Labour leader. And I put that to Jenny Chapman.
Was the real Keir Starmer the Keir Starmer of the leadership contest, or is it the Keir Starmer that we're going to see in the general election campaign? Who's the real one? What are his real politics?
I think what you're seeing now is his real politics. I think the election campaign, leadership election, no other answer would be believed. So there was an understanding of the best issues to talk about if you want to become leader of the Labour Party. But it is, by its very nature, an indulgent process. So you are able, as a Labour politician or whatever political party you're trying to lead, there is permission there to say, this is the kind of country it would be lovely if it could be, because you're not actually pitching to the entire country to be the Prime Minister. You are saying, in an ideal world, what would I love to be able to do? Is the essay question, and those pledges were the answer to that question at that time.
I put Jenny Chapman's candid comments to close Corbyn ally Andrew Fisher.
To say cynically, as Jenny Chapman appears to be saying, reading between the lines only slightly, that yeah, well, he said that because that's what he needed to get members to vote for him, but now we're through that, stuff them. It shows a complete contempt for the membership. If you vote for somebody on a platform of I will do these things, which is a mildly watered down Corbynist platform, basically, the 10 pledges. It was, you know, he said himself in the campaign, it gave me kind of reassurance of this guy's going to win and, you know, okay, it's going to be kind of a moderated Corbynism more professionally presented.
It is the honour and the privilege of my life.
On the 4th of April, 2020, in the middle of the first national lockdown, Keir Starmer was elected leader of the Labour Party.
I had a Kerry electorate up to his house.
Ben Nunn here.
And walked it down his road, put it outside his house, text him saying the lectern's here, and then leave.
Public life has all but come to a standstill.
Starmer's leadership began with an awkward live stream. Stuck on Zoom, unable to get around the country, trying to walk the delicate tightrope of constructive opposition during COVID, it would be, I think it's fair to say, an anticlimactic first year.
It reminds us of what really matters.
He found it really frustrating, really, really difficult, because we'd had these grand plans of going around the country, going to communities we'd lost, etc., etc.
From day one, Starmer had set himself a strategy for his leadership.
And that was the three phases. First, clean the party and sort it out. Second, define the Conservatives. And third, put a pitch to the country.
So they spent the first year on phase one, which was cleaning up the party, the internal work of tackling anti-Semitism. Starmer sacked Rebecca Long-Bailey from the Shadow Cabinet in June 2020. And then, when the EHRC report into anti-Semitism was released, he kicked out his predecessor.
The Labour Party have released a statement in which they've confirmed that they have removed the whip from Jeremy Corbyn. I can read you that statement.
That first year was brutal, and we had so many internal fights to deal with.
This is Jenny Chapman again.
We didn't have control of the NEC. We didn't have the trade union leadership at that point. You know, there was just one bloody pile of shit to clear up after another, you know, and it was hard, and it was done in lockdown, and politics is all about relationships and trust, and it was very difficult to achieve that when no one could be in the same room together.
Starmer had become leader of the Labour Party after just 5 years as an MP, and one of the hardest things for him to get his head around was the sheer bitchiness of the world of politics.
The scheming and the allegiances and people who back each other for no reason of common political cause other than they want to get on particular committees, or, you know, all of that stuff that goes on. He just finds that utterly bewildering and frustrating and quite small, and knows that it goes on and knows that you have to have people around who can handle that stuff. But he's not really interested in that. He sees it as distracting and counterproductive and not really for the benefit of anybody but the individual concerned. If you're talking about so-and-so wants to be chair of this, so we have to give somebody else, you know, something like that, all of that, he's just like, well, if you say so, you know. So that has been one of his challenges, I think. There are plenty of people around Westminster who are quite transactional.
Starmer knew he needed to get better at the art of politics. His then Deputy Chief of Staff, Chris Ward, remembers a competitive side to the Labour leader.
He's constantly trying to self-improve. When we were doing PMQs together, he'd always dread the Thursday morning phone call of, like, we should go over this. And then he'd run through you each of it. He would have thoughts about how we'd improve it and how we'd change it.
But despite his efforts, by early February 2021, Labour MPs, restless and isolated in lockdown, were beginning to wonder what Keir Starmer was up to and whether he was up to the task.
Conservative Party candidate.
And things were only about to get worse. In March 2021, the Hartlepool by-election was called after a Labour MP was forced to resign. This was Keir Starmer's first electoral test. He failed. Jenny Chapman again.
It was really difficult. Like, he'd only been leader about a year. It was the first electoral test, and we failed. You know, we went into this by-election, which we didn't have to have. I think now it was still the right thing, but the party wasn't prepared. The machine wasn't ready. We had very weak ID about voters. It was awful, and we lost badly.
Here's Chris Ward again.
In the first year, we didn't realise how deep the problem was and what we had to do so quickly to get it turned around. But we just went into it with our eyes closed, really.
You had a team of people who were absolutely exhausted. They'd been working from their kitchen tables for a year with a new leader. And we were tired.
It was his first by-election test. And he took it pretty personally when he lost it. But you had this ridiculous spectacle of, like, we were all up there on the day of it, and he was still thinking it was competitive. And then you lose by the margin we lost, and that was a real shock. And I think it shocked him in the sense of he hadn't got a grip on the party, hadn't got a grip on the party infrastructure, we didn't have the right campaign team in place. Look, that was really dark, like 24 hours.
They got back from Hartlepool and hunkered down in Starmer's office, as Chris Ward remembers.
Well, it wasn't great.
Is he upset?
Yeah, he's pretty upset, yeah. And he had a, it was a good few hours of sort of soul searching. But yeah, I think it was a pretty big moment for him, yeah. I think he realised he had to speed up the pace of what we're trying to do.
Lots of people blame me for it, and I let them, because at the time that was the easiest thing to do, because some of the responsibility was mine, because I felt strongly we should have that election come what may. But also, if somebody takes responsibility, it does mean that other people don't have to take responsibility. Keir took responsibility, as he should.
I think his staff...
This is Scarlett Maguire.
...who were out of their depth just decided to go, that they couldn't go. I'm on. They'd been working incredibly hard. I mean, that was the other thing, was that you had these young people who were quite inexperienced, who were at the top of the tree, just working and working to try and make up for their lack of experience. And it just must have been hell for them, actually. I think they realised that the whole thing needed to be revamped.
Hartlepool could have been the beginning of the end for Keir Starmer. Instead, it was a turning point. If some journalists and Labour MPs had been whispering that Starmer was too new to politics, too loyal to inexperienced people, not up to the job, this is where he turned it around. Starmer changed the people around him, both in his own team and in the shadow cabinet, although he famously didn't quite manage to sack Angela Rayner. Ben Nunn and Chris Ward left politics, for the time being, at least. Jenny Chapman went to the House of Lords and has stayed a close ally. Interestingly, none of those people say they were fired, and all say Keir Starmer asks their advice regularly. He brought in new advisers, veterans of the Blair and Brown years, and appointed Rachel Reeves as Shadow Chancellor, forming what would become one of his most important working relationships, as Scarlett Maguire explains. Who do you think Keir listens to?
Oh, Rachel. Rachel. I mean, there's no question about it. Him and Rachel are absolutely as one and talk all the time.
What do you think each of them brings to that working relationship?
She is steeped in economics, right? I mean, absolutely steeped in economics. And although he understands it, it's just not the same. And so I think there's a real trust between them. And I think that's what matters. I mean, obviously he has his... You know, he has the people in his office who also look at things. But there's no question that Rachel really, really calls the shots.
So with a new shadow chancellor from the right of the Labour Party, a new head of strategy from the Brown years, and a head of comms from the Blair years, Starmer started to show his ruthless side.
Labour Conference 2021. Keir Starmer attempted to face down the left over internal party structures. The conference started off a bit dicey. Angela Rayner called the Tories scum and was then forced to apologise. Then Andy MacDonald, who was the last Corbynista standing in the shadow cabinet, resigned. But then, Keir Starmer won the vote on the internal party structures and managed to change the rules. He then delivered his first ever speech to the Labour membership in person.
And the nobility of Keir. Conference, as I say, slogans or changing lives.
I remember bumping into one of Starmer's team right after that speech, and I asked how they felt about all the heckling by the Corbynites. To my surprise, they were actually delighted by it, and they said there couldn't have been a better advertisement for how the party had changed since Corbyn. You could say phase one, cleaning up the party, tackling anti-Semitism, was well underway. And phase two, defining the Conservatives, was just beginning. And as luck would have it, the Tories would help them out quite a bit with that.
I can understand how infuriating it must be to think that the people who have been setting the rules have not been following the rules.
But one of the people who was setting the rules and not following them was the Prime Minister.
Today I've received a fixed penalty notice from the Metropolitan Police relating to an event in Downing Street on the 19th of June 2020. And let me say immediately that I've paid the fine.
By Christmas 2021, Labour had come from 15 points behind to neck and neck. And it would only get better for Labour.
What are you going to do about the turmoil on the markets this morning, sir?
The Tories seemed to veer from crisis to crisis, and mostly all Labour needed to do was not say very much.
On quite a few things, Keir Starmer has changed position over the course of this episode. So why has he moved so far from his 2020 leadership pledges? I asked Jenny Chapman.
We've had a massive economic hit, we've had COVID, we've left the European Union, a lot has happened. The additional thing to point out is that in that time, Keir has spent a lot of time talking to people and listening really hard to what people who've got nothing to do with politics or the Labour Party think about the world and what their worries and concerns are and their ambitions for the future. And that's why you've seen that shift. It's about reality and about having to govern for the whole country and not just the Labour movement. And that has been a really important shift for him. And because he's made that shift, that is why we have a chance, just a chance, of winning the next election.
And did he know he was going to make that shift?
No, I don't think he did. I think that's happened through necessity and it's happened through experience and listening. It was not calculated. You know, I don't believe in all the pledges that were made. They were not my pledges. I thought I had a view, you know, but I wasn't standing to be leader of the Labour Party. You know, these were things that Keir had thought and felt. But the essay question is very different when you're asking to be leader of a movement to asking to be Prime Minister of an entire country, which has people with much, much more diverse needs than our, you know, 500,000 Labour Party members.
So, Aggie, we just heard Jenny Chapman's explanation for why Keir Starmer has moved so far from his initial pitch to the Labour Party. But I'm not sure if all listeners will be convinced by that second answer that he never knew he was going to make that shift. There's maybe still an open question about how much he knew, even then, that he would move very far from that position if he actually became leader.
I think that's been the question for us, sort of the forefront of our minds, when we were making the second part of this profile. What does Keir Starmer actually believe? Did he believe what he was saying in 2020? Was he then captured by the Labour left? Is he now captured by the Labour right? And that's what I don't think is totally clear to me on where actually he as a person fundamentally stands.
And also on Brexit, it's even clearer looking back that he leaned into his Remainer credentials at a particular point when he had an eye on the leadership and hasn't kept to that since. The Brexit circumstances have changed as well, but he was very happy to emphasise that Remain should be on the ballot, happy to look like the second referendum guy.
I think Brexit's really interesting as well because the next question is obviously, why does this matter? Well, it matters because this man could be in number 10. And Brexiteers are concerned. You know, we spoke to a Tory Brexiteer who was concerned that Keir Starmer will get into number 10 and betray Brexiteers. And that is effective as an attack line because he has moved on other positions.
And the thing is that so many of these things we're scrutinising happened when he was either posturing for an election or in the middle of an election campaign. The election campaign was different. That was for Labour leader. But we're in another one right now. He's in the middle of posturing for the next general election. And so I think that a lot of people listening will be wondering, how much is he now again saying what he believes the new electorate needs to hear for him to be elected? And then once he's in that position, what will he actually do?
The thing that drives him most up the wall at shadow cabinet meetings is where there have been moments where people have kind of briefed or, you know, leaked. And he hates the unprofessionalism of it.
Starmer has retained his feeling of being an alien in the world of politics, but now his allies, likewise Streeting, say that's actually a good thing.
He doesn't tolerate or have time for, frankly, a lot of the crap of politics. You know, briefing, leaking, personality, politics, who's up, who's down. I think he has real contempt for the fact that so much political conversation is about the soap opera rather than the substance. And so I'd say, like, anything that's about unprofessionalism and anything that looks complacent is what makes Keir angry. And sometimes, you know, he's not someone who loses temper, really. He's not a hothead. But when he is angry, you know about it.
What angers him? People being late. Punctuality is one of his big things. He used to hate it. I was late for something with him. I think I missed a train on one of our visits, like in the first year. He'd bring it up 5 years later. Unbelievable. Oh, if people are late for Shadow Cabinet, he'll still complain at them now.
In preparation for power, Starmer takes advice widely. He speaks to his current and former advisers. He reads and meets current thinkers and economists like Mariana Mazzucato, and he looks to Germany and the US for inspiration. He also, apparently, speaks a lot to Tony Blair and Gordon Brown and is keen to hear from anyone who's held the position in the past.
Does he ever ask for your advice?
We're in contact frequently. Sometimes it's just me sending him a joke.
Yep, that's former Labour leader Neil Kinnock.
Oh, just a little bit of film or a comment that I've come across and amuses me, and I send that to him. He's immensely dutiful. He's got a very crowded life, and he responds and we exchange views. He's a good guy. He's the kind of fella, even if we weren't in politics, or he's in politics, I'm out of it, but if it wasn't politics was our meeting ground, we'd get on in any case. Apart from the fact that he's an Arsenal fanatic.
So he does ask for your advice and you're happy to give it?
Oh, he doesn't. No. God, no. He'd be quite wrong to ask for my advice. We exchange views, we talk about stuff.
But Jenny Chapman would say that the person Keir Starmer listens to most is not a politician.
I know people want to believe that leaders have got this, you know, this very, very small number, two people that they will go to on absolutely everything and listen to them. And I just don't think he works like that. And I think he listens to a whole range of people. And, you know, if there was one person, I think Vic, actually, his wife, he listens to an awful lot because she works in the NHS and she's smart and she's got her feet on the ground and she gets it. And he will often say, oh, Vic thinks, you know, that's a really crap question for PMQs or something like that. And she's nearly always right.
So I don't know about you, Alva, but I felt like I learned a lot from going to see Keir Starmer's childhood home. I felt like sort of just by standing outside and then having a cup of tea, I found out more about him as a person and what he was like as a child. So obviously it makes sense to go somewhere else where he spent a lot of time.
Where are you thinking of?
I guess just the pub.
So I guess we have to go to the Pineapple, Keir Starmer's favourite pub in North London, for important journalistic purposes.
That's the only reason.
I wonder where he normally sits. We can find out. Should we get a drink? Yeah.
What's he like? Does he chat much?
He's quite sort of reserved, comes up, surprisingly short,
doesn't make a fuss, doesn't try and skip the line, just orders his drink and enjoys it like anyone else.
And what does he drink?
The house ale.
So, Aggie, why are we here?
We are on a mission to find out about Keir Starmer. Who is he? What's he like? And what do we know about him beyond work?
We asked people in Keir Starmer's life what he's interested in beyond work.
Oh, football.
Football.
He still loves playing football and he still enjoys music.
I mean, he is a real family man.
So it's football, kids, Vic.
Beer and curry, do you hear like that?
The challenge and the frustration for those who know him is that the Keir Starmer they know behind the scenes isn't the public persona. And that's definitely been a frustration for his staff, like Chris Ward.
The thing with kids, there's a private care and a public care. And there's the public, I was DPP, really serious professional who's ruthless, who can run an organisation, etc. And there's the personal one who's very different and is a completely normal person in that, you know, you see him at the football or you see him at the pub, etc. He's like any other person.
But you can imagine that no one is more frustrated on this, Aggie, than his media trainer, Scarlett Maguire.
I wanted his charm to come through. I mean, I wanted the person that sat across the table from me to be the person that was on telly. I mean, that's what you always want. I mean, that's what a media trainer, a really good media trainer, wants the person that you train to sound completely natural, not trained. Right. And actually sometimes, you know, it is just about getting them to have the confidence to be that person.
And do you think he does that now?
I think he tries. I think it's difficult because I think he feels that he has to weigh up every sentence.
Keir Starmer has always had a professional self, more charismatic and less wooden in one-to-one interactions, but still a bit of a closed book.
I think what's quite interesting is that although our sessions were confidential, I mean, I did say to him, I could tape them and sell them and nobody'd be interested. He's a lawyer, right? It's very funny. He's somebody who appears to answer all your questions. I mean, you know, I would say we had a good relationship, and yet he's very good at not telling you everything.
And even back in Northern Ireland on the policing board, his colleagues, like Dennis Bradley, just couldn't work him out.
Keir's an enigma. We're all trying to find the inner man. People have been trying to do it for a long, long, long time. And most of us did not succeed fully.
The thing is, it seems like Keir Starmer wishes he could still approach his professional life as a politician the way he approached his professional life as a barrister. He really doesn't understand why anyone would want or need to know what he was like at school or uni or down the pub. It's one of those things that this Westminster outsider is having to make his peace with through gritted teeth.
He would periodically complain to me and say, you know, he had a career for 20 years and no one had ever asked him. No one ever cared about his background or ever asked about it. As soon as he became an MP, all they cared about was his background. And he found that very alien and he was a bit uncomfortable. He's got better at it.
And do you think that'll be a problem?
Look, it's just how he is. And you're never going to talk him off that. And, you know, I'd advise people around him not to bother because there's lots of hours I wasted.
So we can only imagine how weird he finds it that we've just made two whole episodes all about him. And after making this two-part profile, Keir Starmer has only become more inscrutable as we've gone on. People from the world of politics can't agree on who Keir Starmer really is.
But there are two things that everyone is agreed on. He's serious and he's no Tony Blair.
He's always been a serious person.
From my experience of working with Keir Starmer, you're working with a very serious man.
Keir is a serious person.
He's an incredibly serious human being who takes, you know, very, very seriously the position that he has found himself in.
He's no Tony Blair.
So yes, he differs. Tony Blair, it's more Shermanline.
He's not got some of the political skills that Tony Blair had, but on the other hand, maybe people have had enough of charisma.
Thanks for listening to Westminster Insider with me, Alva Ray.
And me, Aggie Chambray.
If you've enjoyed it, please leave us a nice review. And don't forget, you can listen to past episodes, including our profile of Rishi Sunak from a couple of seasons ago.
Our producer this week was Eve Streeter of Whistledown Productions, and here at Politico, our executive producer is Christina Gonzalez, and our editor is Jack Blanchard. We'll be back next week.
See you then.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.